Just William Strikes Again by Rich McCrompton. Read by Martin Jarvis. Part 1. Violet Elizabeth Takes Control. It was the summer holidays, and it was raining. But that was not the only reason for William's depression. William looked up with a certain apprehension at the smoking chimneys of the hall as he passed it. At the hall lived Mr. Bott of Bott Sauce with his wife and daughter. Mr. and Mrs. Bott were negligible in William's eyes, not so the daughter. Violet Elizabeth Bott was a maiden of 6 years with a lisp, an angelic face, and a will of iron. She cultivated and used for her own purpose a scream that would have put a factory siren to shame, and which was guaranteed to reduce anyone within 10 yards of it to quite an expensive nervous breakdown. It had never yet been known to fail. William dreaded and respected Violet Elizabeth Bott. He hoped that she would leave him in peace for that day, at least. He was feeling disillusioned. He'd recently received as a birthday present a book entitled Engineering Explained to Boys. The book had convinced William that it would be perfectly simple, with the aid of a little machinery, to turn a wooden packing case into a motorboat. He had spent 2 days on the work. He took all the elastic that he could find in his mother's work drawer. He disemboweled all the clockwork toys that he possessed. To supplement this, he added part of the innards of the morning-room clock. Finally, the thing was finished, and William, tousled and oily, had deposited the motorboat on the edge of the village pond, stepped into it, and pushed off boldly. It shot into the middle of the pond and sank. So did William. He returned home wet and muddy and embittered to meet a father who, with a grown-up's lack of sense of proportion, was waxing almost lyrical over the disappearance of the entrails of the morning-room clock. That had been for William a thoroughly unpleasant day. He was still dwelling moodily on the memory of it. How was I to know the book was wrong? He muttered indignantly as he walked down the road, his hands deep in his pockets. Blaming me, because the book was wrong! If William had not been in this mood of self-pity, he would never have succumbed to the overtures of Violet Elizabeth. William at normal times disliked Violet Elizabeth. He disliked her curls and pink and white complexion and blue eyes and lisp and frills and flounces and imperiousness and tears. The rain had stopped.
"Good afternoon, William," said Violet Elizabeth.
"Afternoon," said William, without discontinuing his moody scowl and his hunched-up onward march.
Violet Elizabeth joined him and trotted by his side.
"You feeling sad, William?"
she said sweetly.
"Anyone who feels sad," burst out William. "How was I to know a book didn't know what it was talking about? You'd think a book would know, wouldn't you? Blaming me because a book didn't know what it was talking about. It's enough to make anyone feel sad." Well, you'd think a book about machinery'd know just a bit about machinery, wouldn't you? Sinking me in a mucky old pond, and then, when you'd think they'd be a bit sorry for me, going on as if it's my fault, as if I'd wrote the book."
This somewhat involved account of his wrongs seemed to satisfy Violet Elizabeth.
"Poor William," said Violet Elizabeth sweetly. "I'm so sorry."
Although William still maintained his stern frown, the dulcet sympathy of Violet Elizabeth was unexpected balm to his wounded soul.
"Play games with me,"
went on Violet Elizabeth, soothingly. He looked up and down the road. No one was in sight. After all, he must do something.
"What sort of games?"
"Play house, William," said Violet Elizabeth eagerly. "It's such a nice game. You and me be married."
"What, Red Indians? And you a squaw?" said William, with a gleam of interest.
"No, not Red Indians."
"Pirates?"
"Oh, no, William, not pirates. Pirates are so nasty. Just an ordinary sort of married. You go to the office and me go shopping and to matinees and see to the dinner and that sort of thing.
William's dignity recoiled from the idea. "If you think I'd play a game like that," he began coldly.
"Oh, please do, William,"
said Violet Elizabeth in a quivering voice.
"Please."
The blue eyes, fixed pleadingly on William, swam suddenly with tears. Violet Elizabeth exerted her sway over her immediate circle of friends and relations solely by this means. Even at that tender age, she possessed the art so indispensable to her sex of making her blue eyes swim with tears at will. She had, on more than one occasion, found that it was the only suasion to which the stern and lordly William would yield. And now she coupled this with,
"If you don't, William, I'll scoop—"
He was ahead of her. He knew from bitter experience what she was going to say. "All right, all right," he said hastily. "All right, come on." Together they went into the field where the old barn was.
"This must be the house,"
said Violet Elizabeth, her tears gone, her pink and white face wreathed in smiles.
"And now you go to the office, William, darling, and I'll see to things at home. Goodbye, and work hard, and make a lot of money, 'cause I want lots of new clothes. I simply nothing fit to wear. Go on. The office is in the corner of the field. You stay there and count 100, and then come back to your dinner, and bring me a box of chocolates and a large bunch of flowers."
"If you think—" began William, hoarse with indignant surprise.
"No, I don't mean real ones, William," said Violet Elizabeth. "I mean pretend ones, sticks or grass or anything will do."
"Or won't," said William sternly. "If you think I'm going even to pretend to give presents to an old girl—"
"But I'm your wife, William,"
said Violet Elizabeth. There was the first stage, a suspicion of moisture in the blue eyes, and William hastily retreated. "All right, all right, I'll see," he capitulated. "Goodbye."
"Aren't you going to kiss me?"
No, I won't kiss you. I'm afraid of giving you some sort of germ. Goodbye." He departed hastily for the corner of the field before the tears had time to swim. He was already regretting the rash impulse that had made him stoop to this unmanly game. He waited in the corner of the field and counted 50. He could see Violet Elizabeth cleaning the windows of the barn with a small white handkerchief, then sallying forth with languid, dignified gait to interview imaginary tradespeople. Then William suddenly espied a frog in the field beyond the hedge. He scrambled through in pursuit and captured it, and spent a pleasant quarter of an hour teaching it tricks. He then caught sight of an old bird's nest in the hedge and went to investigate it. He decided to take it to pieces to see how it was made. He came to the conclusion that he could make as good a one himself, and considered the possibilities of making nests for birds during the winter and putting them ready for 'em in the hedges in the spring. Then he noticed that the ditch at the further end of the field was full, and went there to see if he could find any newts. Eventually he remembered his wife, and returned slowly to the old barn. Violet Elizabeth was seated on an old box in a state of majestic sulks.
"You've been at the office for more than a day. You've been there for months and years, and I hate you."
"Well, I forgot all about you," William excused himself. "And anyway, I'd a lot of work to do at the office."
"And I kept waiting and waiting and thinking you'd come back every minute, and you didn't."
"Every minute? Well, how could I? How could I come back every minute? How could anyone come back every minute?" And anyway, as he saw Violet Elizabeth working up her all-powerful tears, "It's tea time and I'm going home." Next day, he felt cheered. He met up with the outlaws, variously returned with their families from the seaside. It was sunny, it was still the school holidays, the whole world lay before them. "Come on," said William, "let's sit on the stile and see who can throw stones farthest." It was then that Ginger, throwing a hasty glance behind him, said,
"She's coming."
"Let's dodge into the wood and throw her off the scent," suggested Henry. "Hoo-hoo,
we've tried that," said Douglas with a hollow laugh. "It's never been any good yet."
"Well, let's hide somewhere," said Henry.
That's never been any good either, said Douglas, with another hollow laugh. No, she's got as many eyes as an octopus, said William morosely.
Well, let's try it anyway, said Henry. Come on!
The outlaws dodged into the wood and hastened down the narrow path. Ginger glanced back. The small, resolute figure of Violet Elizabeth could be seen winding its way behind them through the trees.
"She's still coming," he said.
"Let's run," said Douglas. "Gosh, I'm not going to run away from her," said William. "I'm not going to run away from a kid like that. She'd start thinking no end of herself if we ran away from her. She'd think we were scared of her."
"Well, we are," said Henry, simply.
"We'll just take no notice of her," said William. "We'll just carry on as if she wasn't there."
"We've tried that before, too," Douglas reminded him.
"Look round and see if she's still coming," said William.
"I'm not still coming, William,"
said a small, triumphant voice.
"I've come!"
And they realised that Violet Elizabeth, taking advantage of the moment when their backs were turned, had sprinted nimbly forward and was now trotting gaily beside William.
"I saw you come out, so I thought I'd come out, too."
"Well, now you've come out, you can jolly well go back,"
said Henry.
"Don't talk to her," said William.
"I thought you'd like me to come out with you,"
said Violet Elizabeth plaintively.
"You knew jolly well we wouldn't," said Douglas.
"We don't like girls," said Ginger.
"William does," she said indignantly. "He played house with me yesterday. We pretended we were married."
A glorious crimson blush overspread William's countenance.
"Pwah!"
he exclaimed, as if appalled at the depth of her mendacity. But it was not convincing.
"You did!"
cried Violet Elizabeth.
"You did! You were late home from the office!"
And somehow that was convincing. The outlaws eyed William rather coldly.
"If you think," said William sternly, "that four men like me and Ginger and Henry and Douglas want a batty kid like you trailing about after 'em, you're jolly well mistaken."
"I'm not batty, William,"
said Violet Elizabeth in a tone of disarming meekness.
"And I'm not a kid. I'm thick. I'm thick from three quarters. I'm old."
They walked on in silence for some moments.
"Let's just go on talking as if she wasn't there," said William at last.
"It's a nice day, isn't it?" said Ginger, on an easy conversational note.
"Yes," agreed Henry, keeping a wary eye on the intruder.
"A jolly nice day."
"Doesn't look as if it was going to rain,"
said Douglas, throwing a sidelong glance at Violet Elizabeth.
"Or thunder," said Ginger. "Or hail," said Henry.
"Or snow," said Douglas.
"Well, it's the middle of summer, you chump," said William, "so it's not likely to."
"Well, it might," said Douglas.
"You never know with weather," said Henry.
The conversation lapsed into silence. It was broken by Violet Elizabeth.
"I'm going to have a party,"
she said.
"Don't take any notice of her," said William.
"It's a special party, William, and you're all coming to it,"
said Violet Elizabeth in a tone of finality.
"We're jolly well not," said William, stung into speech.
"Yes, you are,"
said Violet Elizabeth serenely.
"My mother's going to see your mother, and they'll make you come."
"If you think," said William, "that anyone's going to make me come to a rotten old party of yours, well..."
He ended the sentence with a scornful,
"It's a special party, William, an unusual sort of party."
They walked on.
"There's going to be games, like Postman's Knock and Kiss in the Ring."
William's face blanched with horror.
"I'd rather die a thousand deaths."